Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Republicans wrap up their party convention tonight, so today we're going to hear from people who voted for Donald Trump in 2016. What do they think of him now?
I'm 35. I have three young kids. I'm also a coal miner in Western Pennsylvania. And really, Donald Trump is the only option I have to vote for president.
That's Ryan Valdeseri from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Ryan told us he's worried about the future of the coal industry, and that's why he believes Trump is his only option. But he also said there are some other factors.
I don't see Joe Biden having the stamina to withstand 4 years in office. I'm not a fan of his running mate. I'm not confident that the Democrats are willing to fight. It seems like they're more conforming to the public identity. I think, you know, just recently how Joe Biden has stated that he's already asking for mask mandates across the nation.
So that's what Ryan thinks of the Democratic nominee. As for Ryan's view of Donald Trump himself,
I feel that Donald Trump has his moments when he is not an ideal representative of the United States. However, he is also a businessman who has built almost an empire in his real estate companies. And if I've learned anything in my personal life and professional life, is that sometimes the nicest person is the most successful. I think that's what we need right now. I think Donald Trump has handled the COVID situation the best that he could. He's open to trying new ideas. And like I said, I really don't have any option, because if I were to lose my job as a coal miner, I would be in some serious trouble.
That's Ryan Valdeseri, a coal miner from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So let's turn to some voters now in Iowa, Florida, and Texas to hear their referendum on President Trump in 2020. All of the people you're about to hear from voted for Trump in 2016. So first, joining us from Cushing, Iowa, is Cheryl Johnson. She's a farmer. Cheryl, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. Also with us from Orlando, Florida, Matt Powell joins us. He's a car salesman and a Marine veteran. Matt, thanks for coming onto the show.
Thank you for having me.
And with us from Shallow Water, Texas, is Tommy Stallings. He owns a 24-hour fitness center. He's also a real estate agent. Tommy, welcome to On Point.
Thank you all for having me. Glad to be here.
So I'm going to first start by asking all three of you just briefly sort of where you are right now regarding how you're going to cast your ballot in 2020. So first of all, Cheryl, if I could start with you, do you know who you're going to vote for?
I'm very much leaning towards Trump.
Very much leaning, but you're not a 100% yes yet?
Correct.
Okay, so maybe there's a little sliver there. I'm going to talk to you about why that little sliver remains in just a second. But Matt, what about you?
I am going to vote for Donald Trump.
Okay. And Tommy, what about you?
For the first time in my life, I'm going to vote for a Democrat. I'm voting for Joe Biden.
Okay. All right. So let's hear a little bit about why. So Cheryl, I'll start with you. You said you're leaning, still maybe not 100%, but why are you leaning towards the president?
Because I still believe that Donald Trump, as a businessman, represents what our country was founded on, capitalism, and as a businessman, and he might be crude and rude sometimes, but I do believe that he genuinely has the best of the American dream at heart for everybody in America.
Mm-hmm. And are you better, you know, typically we ask, or the question is often asked to voters every election cycle, if you're better off now than you were 4 years ago. What is your answer to that question, Cheryl?
That's an open-ended question. You know, that's a definite not yes or a no question because of everything that has started with the COVID, the virus and stuff. Am I better off business-wise with the low interest rates that are out there for companies and businesses today? Yeah, it's a great time to get started if you have it going. Is it tough for the individual who maybe is in rural or in America, suburban America? Might be a little tougher if you have a 9-to-5 job. You know, I mean, it's a very varied question for where you are economically, where you are in this country, environmentally even, you know, what your job is, what your business is. So that's a loaded question in my mind. Am I better off? It's a struggle right now in the farm economy. You know, everything that Trump shut down, the tariffs, everything going against the farm economy right now is not easier. It's tougher. Do I want Trump to come to Iowa, change the RFS so we can get more corn back into the and get our ethanol plants running again? That would make farming in the Midwest easier. But, you know, what's going on? That's why when your producer called, we have to have this open dialogue so I know what's going on in your neck of the woods and you need to understand what's in my neck of the woods. Things are tough right now for agriculture, but I still like the mentality that Trump has of taking care of our country, bringing our jobs back to our country. Let's employ more people. Do I like what's going on now with the unrest of the country? No. Do I wish that was handled differently? Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, Cheryl, first of all, you're right. It is. You're absolutely right. It is an open-ended question, and that's actually why I like it, because I think yes or no questions are overly simplistic, right? And life is complicated, so I want to hear as much as all of you are willing to share about your lives in particular. So I don't mean it to be a loaded question. I just authentically mean it to ask all of you sort of how you're doing right now. So just wanted to let you know about that, Cheryl. So Matt, let me move to you. You are absolutely voting for the president again this time around in 2020. Tell me why.
First and foremost, because I do believe that America should come first for an American president. I think that the American president should look at the world through the perspective of America. How we affect the world, I think, is an important takeaway and an important goal to have. But we can't, the leader of the free world, the United States president, should not look at what's best for other countries when making decisions about the citizens of the United States.
And so are you, same question I asked Cheryl, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago?
I am better off now than I was 4 years ago, and only some of that has to do with the government. I think if to ask that question, many people instantly jump to the perspective of how has government impacted my life? And for my entire life, I've tried to resist the level of impact that the federal government has on my life. I think the federal government should be a lot like children. It should be seen and not heard. They should be as involved in my life as little as possible. I like the restrictions being lifted on some of the industries in this country that have been able to flourish in the last 4 years that have positively affected my economy. I enjoy the fact that we have placed our military people in a better place by removing them from places that they shouldn't be in, yet still funding them and modernizing their mechanism systems. And I do believe that our economy is much better off when we're all taxed a little bit less. I think the ruse that always happens during a tax cut is one side says the rich guys got it all and the middle class didn't get anything. Well, I'm middle class and my taxes are down. And everyone's taxes are down a little bit when companies are taxed less. I'll let your audience in on a dirty little secret about big taxes on big companies. They don't care what their tax rate is. It's a cost that they pass along directly to the consumer. There are many laws in place for corporations to park money offshore, and that's just, and it's completely legal. And if I were running a big company, I'd do the same thing. But if you take company X and you raise their taxes 10%, all they do is pass that along to the consumer. So that's something that affects all people, regardless of economic status or who you vote for. So I am much more in favor of a smaller federal government and working in my own community to make my own life better.
Mm-hmm. And so, Tommy, now to you, you voted for the president in 2016, and you told us you're not going to do that this time around. Why?
Yeah, so I feel like I have to say this. This pains me because I have never voted for a Democrat in my life, whether it's dog catcher, governor, president. I have never voted for a single Democrat in my life. If I checked off a bunch of the policy boxes that I believe in, as Cheryl and Matt both, we probably have ideals almost that line up exactly. I'm a business owner. My in-laws have a family farm and ranch. And so the small businesses and free capitalism are a big deal to me. We don't have enough time to go into what I can't bring myself to do to vote for Donald Trump. But as far as the question on am I better off now than I was 4 years ago, obviously that answer is no, but that is not why I'm not voting for Donald Trump. But I want to put it into some context, if I might, because, the government did tell me that I had to close my fitness center for 96 days, and we're still operating it at 50%. And yes, we qualified for some legislation that helped us, but it wound up being about 30-35% of our revenue. And we've had the business for 9 years, and it's been an absolute miracle that we've been able to keep it open. That is not Donald Trump's fault. But here's the rub. Donald Trump will scream loudly and proudly for every job he's created, for every vaccine breakthrough, for every prophylactic breakthrough on COVID, all of that. Yet refute. So when people say, well, you can't blame Trump for your business being closed, you can't blame Trump for COVID. Of course not. And it's not his fault. COVID is not his fault. But if we're going to hold the president of the United States of America and judge him based on good stuff and bad stuff, then I got to judge him on the bad stuff, too.
Mm. Tommy, if you hang on here for just a second, and Matt and Cheryl as well, there's a lot more that I want to hear from all of you when we come back from a really quick break. We're talking with three American voters who all voted for Donald Trump in 2016 and what they feel about the president now. We'll hear a lot more when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This hour, we're listening to American voters who voted for President Trump in 2016 and what their referendum is on him now, 4 years later, in 2020. Now, yesterday, I asked On Point listeners to give us a call with their thoughts about the president in 2020. We received a lot of voicemails. For example, here's Tim from Milton, Delaware.
I reluctantly voted for him in 2016. I just thought he was a better option than Hillary Clinton. I'll say that I will be more excited to vote for him in this election based on what he's accomplished and the things that he has done, and frankly, the attack he has been under and being able to manage our country.
That's Tim from Delaware. Here's Mark from Fitchburg, Massachusetts.
I will crawl 20 miles over broken glass to vote for Donald Trump. The main reason I voted for Donald Trump is because he is pro-life, not anti-abortion, pro-life. He has placed judges and justices that I agree with that will interpret the Constitution, not legislate from the bench. He has, across the board, been the best president we have had since Ronald Reagan.
That is Mark from Massachusetts. Now, we're talking live with three voters from across the country. Cheryl Johnson is a farmer in Cushing, Iowa. Matt Powell is a veteran of the United States Marine Corps and a car salesman in Orlando, Florida. And Tommy Stallings owns a 24-hour fitness center and is a real estate agent as well in Shallow Water, Texas. Now, Tommy, just before the break, you were telling us why you're voting for Joe Biden this time around. And you said something that, if you allow me, I'd like to just pursue with you a little bit more, that you didn't really want to talk about the president himself or why you weren't voting for him. I was a little little confused about that. What did you mean?
No, I meant that the things that he has done while in office have been, in my opinion, there's so many of them, there's not enough time in this hour to tell you why I'm not voting for Donald Trump. But I can tell you this, as someone who is a hardcore conservative my whole life, my family, it would take a lot for me to do this, whether it was the Helsinki news conference, whether it was Charlottesville, whether it was pulling our troops out of Syria, whether it was his equations to Vladimir Putin and Russia. I mean, the problem that I see is a lot of people that aren't, maybe I'm a little bit of a political junkie, if you will. They don't really see that. And I feel for Matt. He's a veteran. He served our country. He probably knows more about the military than I do. But when I see the moves that Donald Trump has made, just crushing our allies, demoralizing our allies, and propping up people like Assad and Putin and Erdogan and Turkey, it just pains me to see that. And I'll say this, the Republicans, the elected Republicans that support the president now, if this were a Democratic president making these moves, these are not conservative principles. I'm not saying they're right or wrong, but if it were a Democrat president making these moves, their hair would be on fire.
Can you call me real quick and tell her I'm on the phone? I can't.
Matt, I'm wondering if you heard what Tommy just said, and if you wanted to share your thoughts about it.
I did. Foreign policy is a different animal under the Trump administration, for sure. I'll say this. I've never heard Donald Trump say out loud to a Russian dignitary, I'll have more flexibility after my last election. I've also never seen the Trump administration offer to sell Russian oligarchs 20% of the United States uranium supply. And I've also never seen an administration that's been as tough on Russia as far as sanctions are concerned. So I think some of those inroads that are those overtures that people talk about so much are a little overblown. I also think that having been the reason I enlisted in the Marines was because the United States Embassy was overthrown in Tehran in 1979. I lost.
Matt, you still there?
I am. My younger brother fought in three different theaters of operation in the Middle East. I am not a fan of having United States soldiers in the Middle East. I think that building coalitions in the Middle East is the way to do it. And if you see what's happening now with the United Arab Emirates, our policies that we're helping out with Egypt, becoming all of these guys becoming allies with Israel, are going to strengthen our position in the Middle East without using troops. And I think that's the way to do it. I also believe that taking people out of countries that aren't paying their way, is an important gesture to make, because the United States can't continue to support NATO at the level that it does while the other countries who are the members of NATO pay a fraction of what they're supposed to pay. So certainly foreign policy looks different here. There's very little appeasement. There's a whole lot of calling it like it is. And I'm just a guy, and maybe that's why I was a Marine. I'm just built this way. I don't care if your feelings get hurt. I care about the job you do, and I care about saving American lives.
So I'm curious about what you think regarding, for example, you must know the stories of Russia offering bounties for killing U.S. troops. I mean, the intelligence around that was serious enough that the Secretary of State and the Pentagon even warned Russia against doing that. But the president himself, he initially called the reports of those payments a hoax and hasn't really talked about it that much. And just as a veteran, I'm wondering what you think about that.
Well, from what I understand, I can tell you two things. One, that's not new. These are not new procedures or paths that our enemies follow. Did Russia offer specific bounties at specific times for specific troops? None of that's been proven. However, do they do it? I'm sure they do. But this wouldn't be the first time. And it wouldn't be the first time that another foreign body did the same thing. I can tell you for a fact that the Khmer Rouge did that during the Vietnam War, and they were received funding from China with which to do it. So this is not new. In my lifetime, I've seen it happen for 60 years.
Cheryl, you've been really patient here, and I appreciate that a lot. Did you want to respond to the things you've been hearing Matt and Tommy say?
The irony is that when I listen to this and I listen to the expertise of Matt, I'm not even going to begin to try to argue. I admire the military. We need that in our country. Everything he has said, I would agree with completely and totally. I would have concerns about what Tommy says. However, I respect his concerns. The for me, while I'm sitting here listening to these people, Matt's talking about all of his time in service and his family, and I'm sitting here and I'm going, and I'm the farmer here in the Midwest in the flyover states, and I'm, as he's talking, I'm thinking, we've been producing food, and how does that get to those people? We produce the best food we can, and it gets sent to our troops who are fighting for our everyday freedoms. And I kind of get a little bit emotional, thank you, Matt, because I'm like, well, I'm doing the best job I can, and he's out there fighting for these freedoms that I have back here to produce the best that I can. And I'm very moved by that, and I'm thinking that as he's fighting for that freedoms, I think Trump is trying to fight for our freedoms and rights, too, by bringing back into our country our jobs. When you talk about the things that are going on with Russia, the things that Tommy mentioned, you know, I'm not a political junkie. I'm just here in the Midwest with most of the other farmers trying to do the best that we can to support the rest of the world. And I'd love to listen to more of Matt's stories. You know, so what price do I have to pay here in the Midwest? I'm paying a huge price right now because of the farming economy. Every farming is. I live in Iowa, where derecho just went through and wiped out a lot of family farms. But while these people are giving their lives to defend our country, you know, just the military, the men in blue, the unrest in our country right now. This just, what a time. It's scary. Our politicians, it's an evil necessity to have to go to vote right now, isn't it? How do you know what is right?
Yeah, was that you? Was that you, Matt, or Tommy?
It was Tommy. I said that's a very good point. That was well said. It is an evil necessity to have to make a decision like this right now with everything going on. She's right.
Cheryl? Can you explain to me what you mean by an evil necessity?
Because we need it. Because, and I've been a guest on Point before, and I told your producer the other day that I've kind of backed off on watching the news because right now in the Midwest, in our ag economy, with everything that happened with COVID, the shutting down of the plants, you know, we've got South American people own our packing plants. We're importing from other countries. We're trying to survive in the Midwest and make the best product we can for everybody in this country. I turn on the news. I try to learn because, as I told you, the producer, I kind of shut things down a little bit because of the negativity. Mm-hmm. Life is so hard. Anyway, right now, why do I need that negativity? And how do I know where to go to get the right source and the correct information? I need to talk to people like Matt, who's been out there. If I really want to know what's going on in the military side, defending our country, I need to talk to real people because I feel like everything is so skewed that we get from the news media. And I'm going to tell you, I'm not a Fox, I'm not CNN, I'm not MSNBC, but where do I go? And I got to tell you that I do appreciate NPR because you have this open dialogue and you let us come on and speak what we feel. But back to the evil necessity, how do I know and where do I go to get the facts? Somebody tell me. I've said before, I miss the days, and maybe I'm dating myself. I miss the days of Walter Cronkite. The facts were given. The innuendos were not presented on the air. And now we've got, you know, the other night I was watching CNN and one of the guys, he does an air kiss. Was that a political statement? Was I supposed to know what that meant? You know, and that was Jim Acosta. Yeah. I'm like, what does that mean? Kiss off America or kiss off Republicans or liberals? So I'm frustrated, and I don't think I'm the only one that is.
Yeah. Well, Tommy, you said that Cheryl was making a good point, calling it an evil necessity. Why did that resonate with you?
Well, it resonates with me because of how divided our country is right now. And I think in the past, there's been so many one-issue voters that it was just cut and dry for them. And not that this is the appropriate place to talk about, but I think probably abortion is most people's one. If there was going to be a one-issue election, that would be it. They would say, look, no matter what he does, he's pro-life, or no matter what he or she does, they're pro-choice, whatever that may be. But we're so divided right now that it's just hard to come up with any middle ground. What Cheryl said about Fox News, CNN, exactly on point. I mean, CNN, there's no doubt, leans way too much to the left. Fox, there's no doubt, leans way too much to the right. There's nowhere to go where you can just say, okay, here is what is happening. I'll tell you another thing that my dad was a police officer for 33 years. He's deceased now. My mom is still alive. She's almost 80 years old. When she saw me do a voter panel on CNN, she almost had a stroke. And when I was talking to her about it, she just said, look, I just wish you wouldn't vote. Instead of voting for Joe Biden, I wish you wouldn't vote. So I asked her a question. I said, Mom, is there anything Donald Trump could do? And I just made up a hypothetical. I said, look, there's all these pictures out there with Donald Trump and Bill Clinton, with Jeffrey Epstein and this Ghislaine Maxwell lady, all that. If there was documented videographic evidence that our president had done something that was illegal and inappropriate with these girls, would you still vote for him? And she sat there for about 10 seconds. And I finally said, please don't answer that, because I knew what she was going to say. And look, people that vote for Donald Trump, I voted for the man in 2016. I hold no ill will against them. What is evil about this election to me is that sometimes it seems like that there is absolutely nothing at all that Donald Trump could do to say, you know what, this is a bridge too far. And that scares me, because I don't think Donald Trump hates America. I think Donald Trump loves America, but I think Donald Trump loves Donald Trump more than America. And in his mind, he thinks if it's good for Donald Trump, it's good for America. And sometimes that's just not the case.
Yeah. Matt, do you want to respond to that? Because sorry, Cheryl, I'm just going to turn to Matt here for a second. Then I definitely want to hear from you on that, because this question of the president's character and as Tommy said, his view on whether if it's good for him, it's good for America is something that people are wrestling with a lot. And Matt, I just wanted to know what you thought about that.
I think that there hasn't been a president in my lifetime, except to a certain extent, Ronald Reagan, who wasn't an absolute narcissist. You got to think that you're all that in a bag of chips to run for that office and win. Because what greater affirmation can an American have than the citizens of this great country choosing them to be their leader? So I think at some point there's always that high level of narcissism. I would say that, you know, we are a very divided country to a certain extent. I would say you see it more in the news than you do in your own life. I would say that, and I'm talking with a friend of mine while we're driving up to Georgia right now, and he was sharing an experience with me about how he's a man of color, and he was sharing an experience that he had with me about another man on the road who used some choice words at him, and how that one instance has become something that shoots to the front of his mind in certain situations. And I think that's what we're getting a lot from the media. We can throw out a picture, we can throw out a soundbite, we can throw out a something to hang on someone, and that becomes our picture of that person. How many people know, for instance, that Donald Trump banned Epstein from his from all of his resorts after having some inappropriate activity or attempting inappropriate activity with the daughter of one of his friends? How many people know that when Donald Trump opened Mar-a-Lago, that he went against the rules of the Palm Beach associations and allowed blacks and Jews and women to join? How many people know that? And I think that's a fair question to ask.
Well, Cheryl, I'm definitely going to want to hear from you on that. But since we have to take a quick break, we'll wait till the other side of that break so I don't have to cut you off. We are talking with three people who voted for Donald Trump in 2016 and what their referendum is on the president now in 2020 as they're considering who to vote for this time around. We'll hear a lot more from them when we come back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with three people who voted for Donald Trump in 2016 and what they're going to do this time around in 2020. Cheryl Johnson is a farmer in Cushing, Iowa. Matt Powell is a veteran of the United States Marine Corps and a car salesman in Orlando, Florida. And Tommy Stallings is the owner of a 24-hour fitness center and a real estate agent in Shallow Water, Texas. Cheryl, before the break, we were talking about concerns that people have over the president's character versus his leadership, and I wanted to hear what you thought about that.
Well, Tommy started it. I'm going to blame him. But my mom sounds a lot like his mother, okay? And I just want to touch on the fact that when you point the finger at Trump and his, let's say, behaviors or his actions, what makes anybody think that Joe Biden is any different or Kamala Harris? Because if I believe what I see and read, there are lots of discretions in their past also. So again, we're going to do the lesser of the evil here too. And I'm a farmer from the Midwest. I grew up in a ranch in South Dakota. And when you talk about abortion as a one-issue voter, I'm not a one-issue voter, but as an individual, and I hope that people in the Midwest and suburban America can get this, in 40 below wind-chilled blizzards, when I'm out trying to save, whether it be a calf, whatever kind of animal, a dog, whatever, and I've dragged that calf in that snowstorm, and a barman tried to keep it alive, that's an animal. But yet we're going to let in the third trimester, we're going to let babies be killed. And when Kamala Harris votes that we can let babies die on a table, I have a problem with that. And people want to judge me as raising animals for protein. I can't in 40, how many people out there in America are going to be out in that blizzard with me, dragging in a calf with a mad mama cow, trying to save that animal? I would have a really hard time standing by and watching a dying baby. I do have to say, so if that makes me a one-issue voter, I will say that that does bother me enormously.
Yeah.
And sorry.
I was just going to say, Cheryl, that those, so these are the issues. I mean, you were referring to abortions that happen in the third trimester, and first of all, they are exceedingly rare. And just to be fair, I don't think any woman who makes that decision is making it lightly at all. I mean, it's being done for medical emergencies most of the time.
I don't think that it's an easy decision either. Don't get me wrong, but that weighs heavily on my shoulders. The aborting of babies, and again, look, I'm not judging anybody, because I've not walked in their shoes. I've lost a husband in a horrible accident. I have learned through hard lessons in life, don't judge other people. And there's one guy that's going to do that, and we have to meet him someday. But I would do anything I could to help some young lady to not have to make that difficult decision. That's my choice. It's also her choice to do what she's doing with her body, but I'm more pro-life. But let's talk about Tara Reid. You know, you want to talk about Epstein, Hollywood, all those people and Trump's relation with them. But what about all the people that we don't know about, or about the young women out there that don't, you know, have the voice or a platform or are afraid to speak out because of whatever senator? It doesn't have to be our president or the, you know, Democrats nominee. What about all those people? So, I mean, you can't just select Trump. I think it's a rampant issue.
Mm. Well, you know what? I just want to take a step back here for a second, because we're getting a lot of activity on social media this hour from people who are
great.
I'll be frank, who are wondering. I want to make a declaration. We're getting a lot of activity on social media this hour from people who are wondering why we're doing this, and I just want to make it clear as I possibly can, that deep in the DNA of this program is the desire to hear from Americans from all walks of life. We did that throughout the summer with the protests against police violence. We heard from protesters and activists. We will continue to hear voices like that. We're doing it now with people who voted for Donald Trump in 2016 and what they think about now. So that's just a mandate that we have given ourselves, to hear from Americans from all walks of life, and I'm not going to step back from that mandate. So let's continue to listen to each other, all of us, please.
Thank you. Yes.
Okay? And I say that to the people who send a social media flame when we put Black Lives Matter activists on. I'm gonna defend their right to speak on this show as well. All of us. We just gotta keep it civil. We can do this, okay? America, we can do this. So, Tommy, look, let me turn back to you. I've got about 6-ish minutes left with all of you, and I wanna ask, I mean, about that point. What do you, every 4 years, basically, voters are asked to cast their ballot, really not just for a person, but for what they want the future of this country to be, at least across the next 4 years. So what is your desire for this country for the next 4 years?
Wow, that's the hardest question that you've asked so far. Here's the thing. My life was good when President Obama was president, and my life is good when President Trump is president. I used to run a chain of car dealerships, so I'm kin to Matt there. I know his pain for a public company, and so I've been in leadership roles. I've been successful in everything I've done with my life. I've got two kids in college and one in high school. I'm very, very blessed.
I still live in the town with my parents and my twin brother. So life is good. I think more than anything, again, it comes down to the character issue. And I understand exactly what Cheryl's saying is, hey, this could have happened and what could have happened. But I don't think it's any secret about the way Donald Trump has lived his life. And look, I was obviously okay with that when I voted for him the first time. So I'm not judging anybody that does. But the last thing I'll say is this. John Kelly, Jim Mattis, Rex Tillerson, Gary Cohn, Anthony Scaramucci, all these people that think what you want to of them, whether they're financial leaders or military leaders, they know a thing or two about leadership, and they come away from this president up close and they have grave concerns. And that probably weighs more on me than anything about where do I want my country to be in 4 years or 2 years. A lot of those people on that list, I trust their judgment, and they have been successful. So I would think that even the most hardcore Trump supporters, that instead of dismissing it offhand, that might give somebody pause to say, is everyone else wrong? And Donald Trump is always right. And that's what finally led me to say, you know what, Donald Trump was, when he said, hey, the best years of my life was when, right before I ran for president of the United States. And, you know, we had a Democratic president during that time. So whatever happens, this country will survive.
Matt, we've got about a minute. I've got a minute to give you to get to answer that question. What do you want for this country for the next 4 years?
Well, I'm glad to hear his response. I would say is that what we've done over the years, is certainly in my lifetime, is we've put personality ahead of the needs of the United States. So we've elected the nice guy or the good guy or the guy that we think is the least of the two evils or whatever that might be. But I want everyone to just take a minute when you have a minute, and I want you to YouTube a thing that Paul Harvey did in 1965, and it's called If I Were Satan. If you listen to that and you look at today, it's exactly where we are. So what are the next 4 years of this country going to look like for me? I hope they're not the continued slow walk to socialism. And that's exactly what a Biden-Harris presidency would give us. It would be an intrusion into our liberties. It would be a higher dependence on federal government. It would be a bigger acquiescence to foreign powers. And it would not be an America first. And it would not be a freedom first. And it would not be personal liberty first. And that's what's most important to me.
So, Cheryl, you got a minute, too. Your vision, your hope for the next 4 years?
I would have to probably agree a lot with what Matt said, and I will back that up from what I know in agriculture, the constraints that I feel that would be then brought again upon us in agriculture by the carryover of the Obama-Biden years. And I would be afraid of that. Because, again, I'll agree with Matt earlier when he said that, less government. That's what we were establishing. You know, that's why we are the Americans. Less foreign. I don't want China coming in and buying the farm next to me, and they are in this country. You know, I want Americans. I want you to come here legally as Americans. I love my grandmother came from Germany. You know, I don't have anything wrong with people coming in, but come in legally and build the country for what we were, for everybody, no matter what color, no matter what race you are, for everybody, all Americans. That's what I want. And I do think it can be achieved. And I hope that however divided this is, I hope that becomes the goal of everyone.
Well, Cheryl Johnson, a farmer in Cushing, Iowa. Cheryl, thank you so much for coming back on the show.
Thank you for having me.
And Matt Powell, Marine veteran and a car salesman in Orlando, Florida. Matt, thank you so much for being with us today. And it looks like Matt's signal dropped out there, but Tommy Stallings, a gym owner and real estate agent in Shallow Water, Texas. Tommy, thank you as well for joining us.
I appreciate it. Enjoyed it very much.
All right. And I just, again, want to reiterate to people, we want to hear from voters of all stripes, and we will continue to do these voter roundtables with Democrats, with independents, with people who have decided, people who have not decided, from now through until Election Day. So stay with us and keep listening to the voices of your fellow Americans. Now, we're going to end this hour with the story of another person who supported Donald Trump. She lives in Western Pennsylvania, but supporter may not even be a strong enough word to describe Leslie Rossi.
What the Trump House is a grassroots movement with discussions, and you'll find people there that stay all day. They come and they plan to be there 15 minutes and they stay for 4 and 5 hours because they just love all the people they get to talk to.
Leslie's talking about her own home on Pennsylvania State Route 982. She turned it into a political tourist attraction devoted to Donald Trump, but she never planned to spend the next 4 years playing host to thousands of visitors.
People were just amazed how beautiful it was. This old house that we just painted like a flag really meant a lot to people, and it drew attention. But the reason I did it was for delegate awareness, because in Pennsylvania, the popular vote gets 17 delegate votes and 54 were unbound. And so what I had found was other candidates running that were good candidates had their delegates really working the people, telling them to vote for them, but they really weren't saying who they supported. So essentially, the voters in my area in Pennsylvania, really in all of Pennsylvania, if you voted for Donald Trump but picked the wrong delegate, you could essentially knock him out of that spot. So it was really important to know what Trump-supporting delegates you should vote for. So that was the main thing behind it, and that was in April of 2016. I loved his passion. I loved his love for the country. I loved his slogan, America First, make America great again. Those things coming from a small town with family and, you know, work and all the things I grew up around, we needed someone who wasn't a politician, who wasn't going to be bought and vote, you know, or do things because they were getting financial gains from it. He was for the people, and I think we needed a people's president, and we got one. Then the next thing you know, I had people pulling off the road, saying the Pledge of Allegiance to the house. You know, I would see people praying. Next thing you know, we had crowds and crowds and bigger crowds, and people were really, you know, they wanted to talk about, you know, everything going on in their lives currently. And it was very troubling to hear everyone's hardships and where they were at that time after 8 years of Obama. And so many meaningful discussions took place there, and I met thousands of people, all of different walks of life. And it was just such a beautiful grassroots movement that it turned into something really big. And so it was amazing how many people registered to vote, how many Democrats came there, not necessarily liking Trump in the beginning, unsure. They wanted to discuss why should they vote for him. I would give them reasons and say, well, where do you line up? And they found out just through talking that they really did line up with his platform. And so they voted for him. Now those same people are coming back and they're switching their party. So that's what's different in this election. Those people, I don't have to sell Donald Trump to them. They love him. They're all in. They've seen 4 years of him. They're behind him. And they're switching their party. All through 2016, I know the polls and the media kept saying we wouldn't win, but I never felt once that we wouldn't because I believed in what the people were telling me. And I was seeing so many big groups of people from all over and hearing the same thing, that they wanted change, that they were very troubled by what Obama and his administration had done to them financially. And for many other reasons. So, you know, I really never had doubts. And this time, it's even easier because the people, they're really, really behind him. And he was a great president for the 4 years we've had him, and we're going to get him in there again, no problem.
That's Leslie Rossi of Latrobe, Pennsylvania. Now, as I said, we're going to keep doing these voter roundtables between now and Election Day. We'll hear from Democrats, we'll hear from independents, we'll hear from all sorts of folks. So let's take this as an opportunity. What kinds of issues would you like to hear your fellow voters struggle with or think through on this program? Send us a message on Facebook or Twitter. We're at On Point Radio, and let us know what the issues are that you want to hear your fellow Americans talk about. And we'll do our best to try and put together shows around those issues. Thanks a lot for listening today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.